Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
This is What's Next. I am your host, Jillian Hainsworth, along with the incomparable Jay Moran.
Thank you.
We're joined today by University District Councilmember Rasheed Wyatt. How you doing?
I'm doing great, and thank you guys for having me on. I'm excited.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. So you know why you're here.
Yes, I do.
You're here because you recently announced that you will be running for the mayor of Buffalo. Now, we have had a chance to sit down with some of the other candidates, mm-hmm. and we are excited to talk to anyone who will be joining this race for the mayor. But we are here with you today.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. Yes. And as you stated, you know, I just made my announcement a couple of days ago. And I tell you that, you know, some people think this is an easy thing. You just do it because you want to be seen. You want to be heard. Well, I don't just want to be seen. I want to be heard. I want to be recognized that my platform is really for the people. And I think that the 10 years that I've been on the council, I've shown and demonstrated that. I'm not saying what I'm going to do. I'm saying I'm going to expand on what I'm doing. And I think that's so important. I think we were talking earlier and you were talking about what's the game plan for this community. And, you know, it's a work in progress. I have some ideas. I'm going to put them on the table. But at the end of the day, I'm going to be listening to the people. I don't think we get enough of that. I think people tell us that they're going to do this. They say what they're going to do. But sometimes it doesn't come to fruition. Mm-hmm. And if I told you a little bit about my history growing up on the East Side, and we know, you know, on the East Side, sometimes we're marginalized, we've put the cast to the side, we're not smart, we don't have the capabilities, but that's not my story. You know, my story is that I came from a strong family, two parents, grandparents who grew up during the Civil Rights Movement, who always preached about education. And for me, I wasn't the smartest. But I had family members and aunts that were super smart. They didn't even have to study. You know, they were getting A's. And I remember one time my aunt got a B. And I remember the emotions that she had. She was so distraught. You'd have thought she got an F. But that's what you do when you really believe in yourself and you know your skills and your capabilities. That's what I believe. I believe I have great capabilities. I lived in Virginia for a short time. I've gone through the process of being new in the community and people questioning, who are you? What are you going to do? And at the end of the day, I'm about show me. You know, I'm about show me what you're going to do. Don't just talk about it. Do it. And I think, again, if I go back to my 10 years on the council, the things that I've done, how I've dealt with problems. One of my biggest problems when I got in office was the university, the parties in the University Heights. Mm-hmm. That was a rite of passage. You would see the news would call me, hey, councilmember, what are you going to do about the parties this year? And, you know, I didn't have an answer. But when I started meeting with these people, and I heard how this has been going on for so long and how they were tired of it and they were thinking about moving out of Buffalo, I had to do something. And so what we did is we put legislation forward that if there's a party house, guess what? You got a $1,500 fine. And I'll tell you, I bet you not seen anything about parties in the university district in a long time. Mm-hmm. Now, we do have some, mm-hmm. but it's nothing like what it was. And sometimes we have to put in legislation to do what we have to do. And it wasn't to hurt anybody. It was to fix a problem. It wasn't like the school zone cameras where there really wasn't a danger to children. But it's a possibility. Mm-hmm. But the way the city rolled out that project and how it harms so many people, we had to stop it. Because again, we have to make sure our intentions are right. My intentions are always right. It's never to harm anyone. But if I see that it is bringing harm, guess what? I'm okay going back saying that didn't work. Let's do something else. In this city, it seems as though you always have to be right. Well, sometimes changing conditions change your decision making. And so you should be okay with that because people know we're human. And I think people would rather see your human side than your anointed side that you don't make mistakes. Because at the end of the day, we're all human. And I think that people want to see someone that's authentic, that genuinely cares about them. We're the third poorest of our side. I've not heard any changes in that. Because guess what? We haven't made any changes. We don't even have a poverty plan. How can you be a poor city like ours and not even have a poverty plan? There's no plan to fix it. So if there's no plan, guess what? There's a plan to fail. And so I'm coming to the table with all my experience, with my big heart for caring for people, and that's been demonstrated, and saying, this is my idea, but what do you think? Mm-hmm. What's your idea? I'm going to do probably like 15 to 20 sessions, community sessions on various aspects of our city to find out what people's issues are. I got to find that out. If you're out here saying I'm going to run and you're not doing that type of work, I don't know if you're really serious about real change. My campaign is about real change. It's not saying something that you want to hear to get elected. It's about doing the work, having the information, having the understanding what the issues are, and then putting forth the game plan. That's my background. I've been in banking for 15 years. I've actually been in finance for probably 25. I was a CFO. I managed a $16 billion mortgage interface. I was president of a credit union. I was president of the NAACP in Newport News, Virginia. As I say to people, check the receipts, check my record. Don't just go by what I say. There's many news articles and things and press clippings about my effectiveness when I was the president of the Newport News NAACP. There's clippings of me when I first became worked at the HSBC in Business First about my creative attitude when I was president of the Urban Bankers Association. I have a record of doing these things. This is not foreign to me. This is natural. And I think that I'm so grateful for the opportunity to be able to put my skill sets, my caring for the city up to anybody, because at the end of the day, I want to see real change, not just talk.
Yeah. So I definitely want to get to some, you know, finance and budget related questions. But before we get there, you brought up the school zone cameras. Mm-hmm. That was not the first time where you were the sole council member or one of few council members who opposed a project that the city was pushing or that the Common Council at large was pushing. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about any other times where you opposed some of the decisions being made?
Well, just recently. I mean, we went out and bonded $100-something million that our controller said it was not a good thing to do.
And what is bonded?
Meaning that we're going to the market to say we need this money to improve our city. So can you give us this money so that we can improve the city, and then we make these annual payments to it. But right now we have a $17 million deficit right now in our first quarter of our fiscal year. And so for me, again, using my financial expertise, not political, we don't know where we are right now. So for us to go out and bond without really clearly understanding where we're going to be in when our fiscal season ends, it's just not smart. I thought we could just pause it until we got some more clarity. That's reasonable. There's a sense of urgency for everybody, but that sense of urgency has to be, how do we fix this budget first? So I don't want to go get money for something that I may not be able to pay. And so that puts us in a deeper situation. And again, our controller is our fiscal watchdog. How do we go against their recommendation? And so again, she and I have disagreed at certain points, but on this we agree. And again, you have the two most qualified and experienced financial people in the room. And then you have six others that say, oh, we're going to go this direction. So that's the situation that we're in. That's what I've always come up against. And again, some people say, oh, he's always grandstanding. Nah, I'm not grandstanding. I'm just speaking to my experience. And if I'm going to be a council member, if the people elected me, they didn't elect me to be quiet and go along and get along. They've elected me to do what I do, and that's probably, as people would say, I'm a disruptor. Yeah. And it's not a disruptor because I want to be a disruptor. It's a disruptor because sometimes the decisions that we make don't help the least of these, and in many cases don't help all of us. Because as we look at taxes continue to rise, I think the one message I can send to people is that I'm not going to just look at continue to increase taxes, because we all are having challenges with inflation, interest rates. I got to do the best I can to manage what I can manage, to control what I can control, because there's going to be other forces that I can't control. And so I want to put us in a position that we can win or not be as hurt as bad. And at the end of the day, we've made some very bad decisions. Many of them have affected Black and brown communities more dramatically. And I think that I'm the right person to go in and not just fix it or help begin the process on the east side, but for the entire city, because everybody recognizes nobody wants to pay taxes that don't give them the proper services and things that they pay for. And so I want to make sure that when I get in office, that the money that you pay, you feel like I'm getting something of quality. You didn't ask me to pave the streets with gold, but you do want to get a quality payment for what you pay.
It's interesting that you mentioned about the capital budget that got approved, and you were the lone vote against it. And you also mentioned, of course, your financial background. I'm interested, and you said there's right now a $17 million deficit. And we've been hearing these numbers bounced around, so I appreciate you being specific in that regard. So from your perspective, is this deficit that the city has right now, is this because of lingering debt payments? How do you address, or how do you diagnose why that deficit is in place right now?
I think that the biggest thing is mismanagement. You know, one of my favorite movies that's become one of my favorite movies is The Darkest Hour, about Winston Churchill. And I remember he has this crisis with the war, and he's trying to get these people to help, and no one really willing to help. And he was the lone person standing alone. He recognized the vision and understood what he needed to do, but he's speaking to the populace. And so he goes to the public and he tells them this story. And the king says to him, "Winston, the people don't want to be led. They want to be led, not misled." And that's what has happened in this city. We've been misled. We've been told all this stuff we're going to do, and it never comes to fruition. There's no accountability. And so when you have a soundbite to say you're going to do this, you don't ever follow back up and say, "Did it happen?" You just think it was going to happen. And so part of our problem is that there's not any accountability. We're not looking at the numbers and drawing down and making certain that the money that we spend, the residents are getting their money's worth. There's just come to work. And we have talented employees that have the capability, but they don't have the right leadership. And so I want to be that leader. I want to be able to speak to those numbers and really be solid on what we're doing, what we're getting, and where we are. And right now, that's a $17 million number that was told to us. It might be worse. I don't know.
Okay.
The problem is, and this is, I've said this to some of my colleagues, and I'll say it openly, I can't trust what comes out of City Hall. You know, and that's sad. And I think that's where we are as a nation. You know, we don't trust the politicians, and I'm one of them. Unfortunately, I don't consider myself a politician, but through my actions, I try to make certain that people know I'm going to tell you the truth. You may not like it, you may disagree with it, but you're going to get the truth from me. And I think that that's part of the administration I want to put in place, that I'm going to tell you the truth, especially as it relates to the finance of the city of Buffalo.
Yeah, so building trust has been a big topic of conversation recently. I come from the demographic of Black people raised on the east side. I'm actually from your district, grew up in your district, who have not seen any economic advancement. From people who look like me collectively, right? So we have some people who make it out, right? Yeah. As they say, we have some people who find a way, but collectively, the Black population in Buffalo, the Black population on the east side of Buffalo, has stayed stagnant for over 30 years when it comes to income, public safety, all of those different issues. So how would you lead us into a new era, and how would you plan on building trust with this voter base who might think nothing's going to change anyway?
Yeah, I think it boils down to, Jillian, is just you got to have these conversations, and some of them are going to hurt, but we got to deal with our truth. And from that truth, we start building a plan to really address it. And it's not something just to tickle people's ears. And again, my plan is not to come in and just give people rhetoric. You want to see real change. There should be conversations. One of the things that I've been pushing for my district and I haven't been successful is I want to see business incubators in our neighborhoods. We have the Beverly Gray Center, but that's not typically a business incubator. But we have Weedy. You have them on the west side, mm-hmm. but nothing on the east side. My focus is we have to go to poverty. Poverty shouldn't come to us. The jobs and the training centers are where? Downtown. Now, we do have the Northland Corridor, which is a positive thing, mm-hmm. but what's built up around it? And so, again, I do have a vision. I have a plan. But that plan is not complete until we have the conversations and talk about the real numbers. As you said, over 30 years, it seems as though there's no movement for Black and brown people in middle class. We just kind of stagnant. But I do think that, again, we got to have these listening sessions and not just listening, but putting action in place, because I don't believe in having a conversation and talking and then we don't have any plan. I think those conversations don't have to take long. I just think that they have to be intensive and we got to get the right people in the room, because those people are the ones that should be in the room with the mayor's office talking about, well, what are we going to do for small business? We had a great opportunity. We got $331 million from the federal government. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to ever get that again. And maybe, but with this new administration, that ain't gonna happen.
And where did that money go?
It almost $200 million of it mm-hmm. is gone to plug in budget deficits. $200 million. That's insane. We were told when we got that money, hey, council members, give us your list of what you want to see this money go towards. And I had meetings in my district and talked to people about that. And there's things that I wanted to do as far as paving, curbing, because people in my district, if you're a business owner, you complain about, hey, I don't have a curb and, you know, all the problems. But those were the basic things that people really wanted. But the other piece was giving money to small businesses. Now, there's some people got it. Some businesses got it. Not a lot of them. It took Council President Pridgen to hold up the money for Bray Miller, the 561 minute that million, I mean 561,000 mm-hmm. that they're now closing, right. to get other businesses 1.5 million. And the other businesses that were getting the 1.5 million were only getting a small amount. I think the max was $50,000. So I had a couple of businesses in my district that the one business said, hey, if I could get an oven, that would be a game changer for my business. The oven cost $5,000. They was asking for $10,000. They didn't even get the $10,000. So what are we doing and what's the process to help small businesses when they are giving you their outline, they're giving you their business plan, and you can't get the money? I think that we have to look at our city budget and how we carve out some dollars for small businesses. And number one, making it an easier process. I have so many business people say they've applied for this and they got the runaround and all that. You can't tell me that your business is going to grow or people are going to trust you when you can't get something done in a short period of time. One of the problems that we were having also, we have this thing called community block grant dollars. And you can apply for that to improve your house and those types of things. And it's part of emergency assistance. But I heard that the process was so elongated. Sometimes it took so long that people got additional income and they were disqualified because they got additional income. But that was a year. They applied a year ago and now they get new funding. Now you're saying, oh, you can't get it. Well, if you caught the emergency assistance, a year later is not emergency. Right. You know, it's over, you know. And so I want to really look at things like that. And especially as it relates to small business, especially in Black and brown communities, how do we get those dollars out? How do we support these businesses to make sure that they're effective? Because at the end of the day, Dr. Taylor has a plan for the Black community. Mm-hmm. He's called, you know, he's been working on it for about 20 years. Yeah. I want to work with him as well as get additional listening sessions to see how that works, mm-hmm. how can it be impactful. But at the end of the day, I want people to trust that we believe in them and that we're going to do the right things in their community. Because right now, after 20 years and you see the East Side still look like the East Side, mm-hmm. I don't trust you. I don't believe you. Show me.
Yeah, interesting you mentioned after 20 years, because it really brings me to a question. There's no doubt that you were an outspoken critic of the Brown administration on the Common Council. At the same time, and we've asked this to other candidates who have been in here, some have kind of faded away from the question to a certain extent. And by the way, just so everybody knows, those conversations are available online. All these What's Next programs are, as this one will be, so you can review and see what other people have to say. But talk about the Brown administration. Give to me what you saw as its core fault.
Disconnected. I'm going to keep it as simple as I can. Disconnected. And it seemed as though they always wanted to read their own press and believe they were great when they were poor. I think that, you know, when you keep reading your own press, you don't see anything. You only see what you see. I didn't trust what they told me. They were very misleading. And it was always about them, not about the people. My administration is going to be about the people. We got to make sure the decisions that we make are not going to harm them or uplift them. And we know we got to do the entire city. You just can't focus on the east side because you got to be the mayor of the entire city. But there's always sectors or sections that have different issues. And so you got to address those issues. And one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to work closely with my colleagues. They know their districts better than anybody. The mayor always wanted us to like roll out the red carpet and kiss his ring to get things done. It shouldn't be about that. It's about the people. One of the things that I asked for some years ago, I said, do we have surveys? Do we do surveys? They laughed at me. Surveys? Why don't I do a survey? Well, business 101 is you ask people what their opinion is of your service. You know, in the banking sector, I was part of a team that would constantly look at evaluating employees, getting their feedback. And then I remember one session where we were meeting with the executives, I mean, all the senior people, and they started talking about stuff in the branches. They say, hey, yeah, we need to do this, to do that. But not one of them worked in the branch. Not one of them had the expertise of the branch. Not one of them had engaged them. So I said, well, how can we answer that question if we've not been? I worked in commercial banking, but I didn't work in the branch. So when we brought the branch people in, all the stuff that we talked about was washed away. Because when we went to the people that actually do it, they said, no, we don't need that. That ain't our worry. Our worry is this. And so, again, I'm not afraid to go to people. You know, I had a forum, What's Missing in the Black Community, like last October. And, you know, it was tough. It was really tough because people were beating up on me. Like I said, I'm only one council member. And you got to understand we have a large city. But at the end of the day, I'm coming here saying, I want your opinion. I want your idea. And just don't beat up me. You can say what you have to say, vent, but you got to have an idea of what a plan it looks like. Because at the end of the day, you can come in with all the talk and scream and holler. But at the end of the day, what is your opinion? What is your idea? How do we move forward? And so I'm going to be doing those things. And I'm okay with accepting people's comments. But all I say to people is just respect me. I'm not going to disrespect you. I work for you and I'm going to listen to you. But let's have that conversation, because I think through the conversation, I listen, as one of my professors says, slowly. Sometimes you listen and then you already want to get to the answer when you really didn't hear the comment. So I'm going to listen slowly and look at how do we make our city better? How do we hear from the people who have been put aside because they didn't kiss the ring? You don't have to kiss my ring. You ain't got to call me the honorable. I want to do is, my name is Rashid. My mama named me Rashid. Call me Rashid and we can start conversation just from that. But I think it's so important at this time. To me, it's a sense of urgency. Because our city is in crisis, and I'm not just making it up. If I'm telling you we got a $17 million deficit right now, who knows where we might be in May. And so we have to start acting appropriately. I just recently put forth a resolution to evaluate some groups that may come in and give us some efficiencies. You know, where can we be efficient? I mean, Public Works is our largest department. We probably need to look at Public Works to see how can we become more efficient. The other piece is looking at our police department. We have a $41 million they're paying in overtime. Mm-hmm. Now, some of the employees may say, well, he's taking our overtime away. Sir, ma'am, you have a job. And I'm not saying defund the police. That ain't my mantra, because I know people in my district say, I need more police. But we got to be more efficient. We're a small city. We don't have the revenue base that other cities have, you know, like New York City. So we got to do well at what we have. And that's the biggest number on the page. So I have to drill down to figure out
why do we have $41 million in overtime? Is it that we have more crime? Do we have more fires? We have to break it down and see what it is, and then we have to manage it. And we have to say, okay, y'all can't do this. But we got to put that in place, and it's fair. You know, any corporation that's paying $41 million in overtime, I bet you that CEO's not even there. Because you messing with our bottom line, and that's, you can't do it. And our bottom line is the services that we can deliver for the people.
Let's take a break on what's next. Our guest this morning, Rashid Wyatt, University District Council member and also candidate for mayor of Buffalo. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Our mission at Buffalo Toronto Public Media is to serve our local community. And on WBFO, we do that by keeping you informed and connected to your community, whether it's by hearing from a local Black poet about what it was like to move from the inner city to the suburbs on What's Next.
So that emotional change with that culture change combined led me realize that basketball and being physical wasn't enough. I needed a way to figure out my emotions. So the first poem I wrote in the cafeteria of Sweet Home Middle School was Outcast.
Or it's exploring the East Side Garden Walk.
It's wonderful that we're seeing engagement in beautification and sharing gardens, because we believe that we can build more vibrant communities by sharing our gardens, by sharing our stories, and by building real connections between people. We came through as neighbors and cleaned this space out and began plot by plot putting plants in.
This is Public Media.
Buffalo Toronto Public Media is glowing with accolades in 2024. The Webbies, Tellys, GLAAD Awards, and the New York Emmys recognize the brilliance in originals like Brave Spaces, sharing LGBTQ+ stories of triumph, Compact History, exploring the history that surrounds us, and Let's Go, bringing adventure to young, curious learners. Experience them all at WNED.org or on the BTPM YouTube channel.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And we're back. This is What's Next on WBFO. This is Jillian Hainsworth, joined by Jay Moran. And we're here today with Councilmember Rashid Wyatt, the Councilmember of University District and now mayoral candidate for the city of Buffalo. So before we went on break, you started to talk about policing. Mm-hmm. You were talking more about the budget, but I do want to dive a little deeper into that. Mm-hmm. One of the big issues we've seen, especially since 2020, is a trusting relationship between our police force and the residents of this city. Mm-hmm. We used to have an accountability board, mm-hmm. Where people could come and state any complaints or interactions they've had with the police to other citizens. There was no real bite behind the accountability board. There was no actual accountability. But that accountability board was disbanded with the idea that something better and more efficient would be put in its place. Mm-hmm. We have yet to see anything be formed mm-hmm. to really help when it comes to garnering trust and accountability with our police department. So do you have any ideas of how you would handle that as the mayor?
Well, one of the things that I did as council member is that I put forth a resolution to enact a civilian review board. Rochester, Syracuse, other cities in New York State have one. But my colleagues were not comfortable in doing it. And so, again, I'm one council member. I think that's important. I know that there was a recent story article in the Buffalo News that talked about the internal review process, in which, again, it almost seemed like police do no wrong. And I just think that, you know, when you hear something like that, you got to ask the question. This is a national problem. And so for you to tell me that you have a 90% or 95% rate where the officer did no wrong, I'm just saying that's folly. So we have to put some people in place that are not anti-police. My recommendation is not for anti-police. you have to have a watchdog in there that's going to make sure that there's accountability. And if it seems as though every time that there's something brought forth, you're clean, that's a problem. And so even as it relates to some of the issues regarding the police department, we pay the bulk of our claims. We have this claim process that if the city does anything that it hurts someone, we have to go through this process. We have to pay someone out. We had to pay a woman who was paralyzed and her life changed, forever changed, $43 million. We had to get a bond for that. Mm-hmm. We had to bond that. This officer was answering a call that, unfortunately, from what they say, was a domestic violence, but it was not a good call. But the fact that he drove on the other side of the road on Main Street where there's a median, what were you thinking? But this person still has a job. And again, I'm not against police, but when you cost me that type of money, you ain't gonna have a job. And that's just from a practical sense. In any corporation, if you cost them that type of money, when you go outside the lines, this wasn't something that he did that he was trained to do. The police said, you can do this. They had all sorts of write-ups that said he went away from way out there, but he still has a job. And so how do we give the trust to people or people trust an organization or a process in which things like that happen, but you keep your job? So I think that that's important. That's something that I would love to have conversation on. Now, we do have a body that's in place that took the oversight committee. But I think the first one we had was more effective. But then it had these internal issues that I can't fix. But at the end of the day, if we're going to do this and do it right, we have to have a civilian review board that because our state attorney general said the police should not be policing themselves. Mm-hmm. But it continues. So I have been on the right side of that. And I've talked to the union and told them, I know you don't believe, you don't trust me in this, but there's a lot of distrust of you. And so I'm on the right side, and I think we can come together because I do think that the police union and even officers, even the commissioner, they mean well. But I think at the end of the day, my platform is going to be we have to move in a direction where we do what's best for the people, not just for an individual organization, because I do want to see. And I think we have made some improvements in relationships with the police department, but it's been on their terms. And I think that we have to get outside of that and we have to meet in the middle and say, hey, these are some things that we would love to see. And I think that a civilian review board to have people who can make sound decisions when it comes to those matters is par for the day.
It's interesting. So most of the council then was against that resolution that you said, you know, to try to get the review board in. So it sounds like there's not political support for it right now. I'm sure you have conversations mm-hmm. with your colleagues. Mm-hmm. What is at the root of that? What do you sense from a political standpoint that they would be against it?
I think the biggest thing is the union. You know, the union is against it.
So they fear the union?
Yeah, the union is powerful. And but I don't fear anybody and I'm not disrespecting anybody. You do the right thing for the right reason and let the chips fall where they may. I've had conversations with the union. I went to them for an endorsement and I can go back to them and say, ask me what you put in place as far as cars, as far as equipment. What things have I denied you? I've not denied you a single thing. I've given you everything you needed. You said you need additional cars because the other cars are broke down. We did that. And so but I have to take a stand in certain areas. And I hope that you can respect that because the situation when it regarding George Floyd and the other issues that have happened around that is real. Mm-hmm. And we have to take a stand as a city. And I think we should be more proactive than reactive and doing something about it. And I think we can. I think we have people who mean well that can make this happen to make sure that, again, we start rebuilding that trust in our officers. And I think that's fair.
So you run for mayor, you become mayor day one. Mm-hmm. What's the first thing you're doing? What's the top priority for you?
Dealing with housing. That's mm-hmm. That's the biggest issue. And the good news is we have a task force that I can give credit to former Elkhart District Council member, Council President Pridgen. He put a task force in place where we got a lot of good feedback. But now, as mayor, I have the ability to put that in place. Because again, the one thing that, again, why people are disenchanted with our city and our government is that we come forth, we put forth these ideas and you do nothing with it. Dr. Taylor told me that he put forth his plan for the East Side 20 years ago. We never touched it. And so I want to empanel people and let them know that when you give me a recommendation, I may make some changes, but overall, we're going to put that in place because that's what you've done. I don't want people just to come and feel like I'm just wasting time. You know, people's times are valuable, and I'm going to show them from a business standpoint that when you give me your time, we're going to use that energy to do the right things because people don't have time to waste for nonsense.
Housing has to be, of course, like you said, it's a key part to a city that's struggling with poverty. And you mentioned earlier about having a plan for poverty. What are some of the other elements that have you seen ideas in other cities that could perhaps work here in the city of Buffalo?
Well, yeah. And actually, I love using ideas from other cities, but I'm just going to go what we have right now.
Okay.
We have a law that says that we have to do so many inspections a year. Right before us right now. I don't know if it came from somebody else, but we have a law that says we have to do this proactive rental inspections. If we simply did that, it could be a game changer because there are a lot of people paying $900, $1,000, $1,200 mm-hmm. for housing that I would not give you a 50 cent for. Mm-hmm. And they're forced in that situation. And many of them probably don't have good credit, so they can't go to some of these nice little places. And in many cases, they may not even have the capacity for the number of children they have. So I say that we have to start enforcing that. If we just did that, the other piece of that is that we have to start finding some of these landlords. One of my biggest problems in my district is housing that landlords don't take care of. I have a house in my district that the landlord has owned for 15 years. I went by it. I said, do somebody live there? Well, the landlord lives in California, but he's still collecting rent. And I said, that's absurd. And so, again, we let the least amongst our community get preyed on with people who don't care about us, who don't care about our neighborhoods. The two houses on the side of this are immaculate. Immaculate. I mean, the grass was cut. And he said, we've been having a problem and no one seems to care. So we got to get those bad actors. We got to let them know we're not going to take it anymore because we have to send a message that if you are going to do business in the city of Buffalo, you better be up to par. Because our residents deserve better. And we need to make sure we have that standard and that expectation. But at the end of the day, the city has to hold those folks accountable. Many of these people are afraid to call 311 and say, hey, this landlord is not taking care, because they're going to be retaliated and they're going to be sent out to the streets. And where are they going? Mm-hmm. Probably in a worse situation. And so I think that when we talk about poverty, when we think about the quality of life that many are experiencing on the East Side, that's one of the things that would be beneficial if we did it in a good way. And the other piece is we got to hold the permits and inspections department accountable. When you come to work, you have a job to do. There should be some outcomes. And we have to make sure those outcomes are happening on purpose. If we're saying we got to inspect 5,000 properties and we got how many inspectors, how many are they going to do a day? How many are they going to show us a month? How are they going to show us a quarter? Because I want to produce. If you're getting a dollar for the city of Buffalo and you're being paid, you got to do your job.
And what about the thousands of properties owned by the city? Mm-hmm. Is there any plan or ideas around getting those back into the hands of the people?
Well, for me, and I've said this, I was on one of our assessment groups that deal with those vacant lots that people want to purchase. I think we should be selling these properties to these people. If you live next door, and especially if you've been maintaining that property, because there's a lot of residents. Like in my district, I had a gentleman who was maintaining the property for 15, 20 years. He had been trying to get it, trying to buy it. City gave him the run around. He finally got it after 15, 20 years. If they've been maintaining it and you have block club leaders and members that can say, hey, that person has been doing it, let's get it to them. I ain't talking about no thousands of dollars. If I give it to them for $5, and I know the city needs money, but at the end of the day, if someone is putting it in their sweat equity, let's give them a return. Let's let them have it. Add that to their parcel. It increases their tax a little bit, but it's fair to me. And those other properties, we're working on this infill housing piece, which I think is very important. I know MMB is doing some up Adam Street project that I'm looking forward to see the impact of that. We need to do more projects like that. But then we have opportunities to help minority businesses in those situations. And so there's a win-win. We have to have a more robust housing strategic plan that's on purpose, not just lip service. Outcomes. I want to see outcomes because we know we have a housing crisis. I think that Benlick, who we partnered with, that's through Erie County, is working on a project in my district. And I said to them, I want to make sure the houses that are in that community that you're going to be developing look like that community. I don't want it to stick out like a sore thumb. They've gone to the community, they've got their input. And so I think that's the right path. We just have to get it done quicker. But right now, with the financial conditions of the city, I don't know if we can, but that's going to be a priority as well. How can we make that happen? How can we get the resources? How can we leverage dollars and working with organizations to make those happen in a more efficient way?
University District Council Member Rashid Wyatt with us this morning. He is running for mayor of Buffalo. I'm Jay Moran, along with Jillian Hainsworth. We're going to take a time out. Come back with more. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Hey people, Corey here with Compact Civics. If you're from Western New York, you know snow. And unfortunately, you know how damaging those annoying potholes can be. But do you know what's involved in filling those potholes so your car tires can stay intact? Let me put you on. Because maintaining roads involves way more than the average citizen might think. Cities, counties, and states take part in this process. Why, you might ask? Well, a state might be responsible for filling potholes and paving, but a city handles snow plowing and de-icing. These responsibilities are shared among elected officials, road managers, supervisors, and other essential personnel, all so you can drive safely. Try and imagine a city or town without a public works department. No one to manage public buildings like schools or hospitals, or maintain infrastructure we rely on, like roads, bridges, and airports. Can't forget about essential public services like water and sewage. And when those summer months hit, you can forget about public spaces we enjoy, like parks and beaches. We deserve these spaces, and our taxes pay for it all. So, next time you drive across a smooth road or see a snowplow clearing one, appreciate it. Public works are the backbone of what keep our communities and quality of life thriving.
Special thanks to our partners, the Buffalo Presidential Center, whose mission is to explore and share stories about Buffalo and Western New York's contributions to the U.S. presidency and national affairs.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And welcome back to What's Next. I'm Jay Moran, along with Jillian Hainsworth. We're talking with Rashid Wyatt, the University District Council member and, of course, candidate for the mayor of Buffalo and a proud alum of Seneca Vocational.
Absolutely.
So our next question is about education in the city of Buffalo, which, of course, is an issue. That very chair, a couple of weeks ago, we had, there was two chairs. There was Bishop Badger and Sam Radford. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they were totally in favor of is mayoral control of the city school district. What's your thoughts on that?
You know, honestly, I heard that some years ago when it was proposed, and I thought it was a good idea. But now we have a superintendent who I have a lot of respect for. I know this is not an easy job, but she comes from the city. Matter of fact, I went to school with her, went to the same grammar school, and she was just as smart then as she is now. And matter of fact, I just had a conversation with her, and I said, because it came out in the media that I wanted to see us partner with the school district and school board. And we've never heard that before. There's never been a partnership in sending a message about the importance of education. And so I think that's critically important for a third poorest city of our size. Education is a key for our children to get out of poverty. And so I believe in that. I've been the only councilman. I'm not going to say only. I'm not going to keep saying, because I don't want to make it seem like it's all about me. But I have said to the former education chair, Brian Bowman, we should be partnering and, having these collaborative conversations with the school board. I think it's important. The school board, the mayor's office, and the council, we should be on the same page from this, speaking from the same sheet of music about the importance of education. There's a lot of things that I would love to see improved. And as far as our reading outcomes, extremely. If a child can't read, they can't learn. And so, again, I believe in that. I wouldn't be advocating taking it over, but I certainly will be fusing that partnership for us, again, to start sending the message that we're all on the same page. This is all important to us, because it seems as though it's important to the school board, but nobody else is believing in it. And I think that, again, it's about messaging. And what you value is what you send forth, and people see it. And I think it's so important for people to see that we value education. See, people in my districts, there was a time when the attendance was poor in our school. And people would call me, you know, school is trying to put my child out. They miss so many days. And I would have candid conversations with them. And I think in some cases we have to have candid conversations with our parents about situations, but we also got to understand where they're coming from. And I applaud Sam Radford, because he's given me a lot of insight. We think it's as simple as get your child to school. Well, if a parent has to work and they're the only breadwinner, and they're trusting their child to get it there because they have nobody else to trust, that's a problem. But who's going to help them? And so I think that, again, working together, having those conversations, talking about what we can do right away, not just talking about what we can do in a year. What are some low-hanging fruit that we can begin to improve this process? But most importantly, let everyone know that we're on the same page and that your child's education is so important. Because what's important to the school system is important to the city. People look at the city and say, am I going to move to that city? I got to check their education system. If it ain't poor, guess what? I'm moving to Amherst. I'm going to Cheektowaga. And so I think, again, when we work together and we have a plan that we're doing on purpose, I think we can get better outcomes. You know, the city continues to shoot themselves in the foot, acting independently. Recently during the budget, they put forth a hotel tax. They want to get a hotel tax. And I'm like, well, if you get a hotel tax and you're already being taxed for Erie County in the state, that's going to increase the rate here. So why would I stay in Buffalo? I would stay in Cheektowaga or Amherst. And so it's things like that that are part of our Achilles heel. And that we do a knee-jerk reaction to things instead of really thinking it through, getting people who are the experts in the room to talk about the decisions that we make. We need to bring people in the room that says, hey, this might be this impact, but you need to listen to those people. And again, we just seen the show. We won't listen to the experts. We only listen to ourselves.
Another conversation we've had to have recently on what's next around our education system is around school suspensions. Mm-hmm. Now, we talked about parents who might not have a support system. We've spoken about poverty. For some of these kids, two of their three meals a day are coming from their school. Mm-hmm. So not to be dramatic, right? But mm-hmm. school suspensions can become a public health issue. Mm-hmm. Where do you stand on how students are disciplined while in school?
Now, I've talked to you all about almost everything, and I was adept in talking about it. I'm not as adept at this. However, I think, again, when we have these conversations and we're talking about real change and really the impact to those who are the least in our community, we have to come up with a strategy and we have to institute it. And so, again, if we partner together and we have these conversations, I think we can come to a understanding of the importance of this, because not everybody understands that situation. They think that's the best thing, to suspend a kid and get him out the classroom. Well, that only maybe increases or heightens the issue, because now they become more disruptive. When I became council member, one of the things that I had, we had a problem where kids were skipping school and breaking into people's homes. And so at first I was like, okay, we're going to have to start putting something in place where we had a daytime curfew, because I can't have kids staking out Mrs. Jones' house to wait till she leaves to go break in. But people came to me and said, Councilor, that may not be the right thing because of X, Y, and Z. Maybe there's other way that we can do it, that when we get these children, we can take them to a site in which we can give them other services to kind of find out what the issue is. And I said, you know what? That's it. So it's not simply throwing a baby out with the bathwater, but saying, while this situation happened, how can we best utilize that opportunity? Because some of these kids need additional attention. Is there an opportunity to get us a program so that they can go there and get that additional attention in hopes that we get them back on track? There's other options, but we have to start exploring those options. And it's simply not sending the kid home or suspending them. Some of this stuff I do agree should stay right in the school in some way, some form, because, again, you're creating another problem for a family that's already struggling. So I would love to have those conversations to look at how we can make something happen.
Earlier, you said you don't consider yourself a politician. So what do you consider yourself?
Probably more of a community advocate. You know, that's what I've been doing for a long, long time. And it started a long time ago with Darius Pridgen. We founded a group called Concerned Citizens Against Violence Coalition, and that's when violence had started kicking off in our community. We addressed violence. We were addressing the stores that were selling drug paraphernalia early on. And so he has been a great influence on me, because my path was always, I want to be a CEO of a bank. You know, I want to get my hands dirty. I want to keep my nails clean. But he has sensitized me in a way that I got to understand that I'm here to do a great work for people. And I may not make a lot of money, and I'm okay with that, because I know my calling is more than just about money or titles. I've had a lot of titles that I can run down to you, but it don't mean anything if I can't give back to my community and I can make us better. This is one of the biggest steps I've ever taken in my life, but I like having people around me that have that energy, that have that caring, and you're going to find out that's all I'm going to have around me. It ain't going to be yes people. It's going to be people that know. It's going to be people that we might have butt heads, but at the end of the day, we're going to do the best thing for the foundation of why I'm doing this is for the people.
After 514, there was a huge focus, of course, on the east side, and we've talked about this before, that there was a spirit of trying to make changes and bring new change and new life to the east side. In your opinion, somebody who's University District, you're on the streets, you talk to people, has that faded?
Yeah, and it's sad, because we had an opportunity to make people believe that we truly care, and I don't think we did a good enough job. And I'm not knocking anybody, it's not my district, but I'm a person just like the people that were affected. And I cared, you know, one of my good friends who I graduated, I worked with actually, his aunt was in that tragedy. And, you know, I feel for him. And I think that, you know, and I'm not knocking what they're doing. Please, people will say, oh, he don't like the monument. We're spending a lot of money on monuments. But I think the people who had perished would be more apt to saying, let's make some real change in my neighborhood, housing, services for our community. But that's not my plan. But I would love to see real change so that people see it. I was at the announcement of the monument in front of Tops, and there was a woman there, and she was so irate. She wanted to just turn up at that announcement. And I said, man, please don't do that. I understand. Believe me, I understand your frustration, but we got to act out in the right way. We can't make a scene, because at the end of the day, that was a solemn moment to pay respect to those folks. But at the end of the day, she says, you see that building right there, right by the Tops? That's been vacant and dilapidated for how many years? And it's still vacant and dilapidated. So I think when Jillian talked about real change and she wants to see it, and we just hear it, we talk about it, but nothing's happening. That's why people are disenchanted. That's why they don't believe in leadership. That's why they don't believe in government. And I think that we have to start showing people that we care. And it's just not about rhetoric. It's really about action and them seeing it.
So if I give you 30 seconds to tell me why I should go to the polls and vote for you as the mayor, why?
I have a track record, and I think that everybody who has seen me or even talked to me know that some people may say he's mean, he's this, he's that. And you see, I'm not mean. I'm just very passionate, and I care about this city. And you can take the title away from mayor. If you just said community advocate, I would keep that, because as long as I can make change for the people, that's what it's about. And so I'm someone that's just not going to do the political thing. I'm going to do the thing that makes sense. That people know that your tax dollar is going to go very far with me because I care about you and I want to give you exceptional services, not just good service, exceptional services. And I'm going to support the employees who work in the city, who really care about the city, that we're not, it's going to be about politics. It's going to be about service and it's going to be about serving the people.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. This is What's Next on WBFO. This is Jillian Hainsworth joined with Jay Moran and our University District Council member, Rasheed Wyatt. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.